Welcome everybody to the December 6th, 2023 Behind Our Eyes book launch with author Deanna Noriega and interviewed by Cheryl McNeil Fisher. I'm your host, Annie Chepetta, and I'm going to be reading some prefatory matter for your listening pleasure tonight. And then after that, Deanna and Cheryl are going to take it away. Deanna Quietwater Noriega is half Apache and a quarter Ojibwe. She learned to read at 3 at her great-grandfather's knee. She says what she writes is the result of a mind that's always busy. Deanna writes poetry, essays, and creative fiction. She considers herself a daughter of Mother Earth. Her sense of justice and concern for children, the elderly, animals, and her world have forced her to be an activist, despite a natural shyness. She has raised 3 children, been married since college, and lived a rich, fulfilling life despite becoming totally blind at the age of 8. And this is from Cheryl in her introduction of Deanna's book, which we're going to hear about in a little bit. I met Deanna through the American Council of the Blind Community and Guide Dog Users Incorporated. In the past 3 years, through the writing groups we are part of, I've had the privilege of witnessing her passion and talents firsthand. Her Native American name, Quietwater, perfectly reflects her peaceful, contemplative nature, which I admire and cherish. In her new children's book, Dogwood Blossom, Deanna beautifully invokes a simpler time and her Native American heritage, which includes life lessons, family, friends, and love that will resonate with readers young and old alike. Deanna's unending curiosity and talent for weaving captivating narratives have never wavered, undeterred by the challenges presented by her visual impairment. She became an educator and advocate, even establishing a school for blind children during her time with the United States Peace Corps in Western Samoa. Her Native American roots and unique sense of humor infuse her writing with a compelling authenticity. The inspirational narratives in Dogwood Blossom showcase just a sliver of Deanna's talent. Her impact extends far beyond the page through projects like the Braille Books Program, which provides literature access to blind children. Immerse yourself in the captivating world she creates and you will be left yearning for more. I highly recommend her memoir, 50 Years of Walking with Friends, which was published in 2021, for deeper insights into her remarkable life. It is an honor to write the introduction to Dogwood Blossom, and most of all, to call Deanna a colleague and friend. All righty, take it away, ladies.
Thank you. Thank you, Annie, for reading that. Appreciate it so much. And I'm Cheryl McNeil Fisher, and I'm happy to introduce Deanna Noriega and her new book, Dogwood Blossom. And to get started, we're going to hear a piece of Dogwood Blossom by Deanna herself. Take it away, Miss Deanna.
Okay, this is a short insert. Oops. This is a short excerpt from chapter 1. Which is titled Turning Cherries into Red Winter Sweaters. Lisa reached for the cluster of deep red cherries above her head. They were so pretty against the green leaves. She wondered if she could afford to buy a warm red sweater for school that fall. Grandma would say it wasn't a practical color for a 10-year-old, but perhaps Mama would say yes. After all, Lisa would buy it with her own money. Mr. Hodges had said they would get 12 cents a lug, and Lisa was still light enough to reach some of the higher branches. where the adults on ladders couldn't go. Her small, nimble fingers worked fast, too. She was sure to have enough money to buy one pretty thing, even if it was impractical. Red was her favorite color. A cherry red sweater would go well with the plaid, pleated wool skirt she had her heart set on in the fall Sears Whoosh book. Of course, she would first have to buy some snow boots. Last winter, Lisa and her brothers had had to share two pairs of boots among the three of them. They had to take turns staying inside and watching from the window while the other two played in the snow. This year, they would each need a pair of boots of their own because her youngest brother, Ryan, would start first grade. She also needed heavy winter underthings like long johns and wool socks. Thinking of heavy woolen clothes made her feel itchy. She scratched at one of the dozens of mosquito bites on her thin arms. There were no screens on the windows of the sheds where the pickers slept. It was so hot and humid at night that she kept kicking off the thin cotton sheet, and then those awful pests bit her to pieces. At least Lisa got a top bunk. The straw the farmer provided for mattresses sifted through the planks. Anyone sleeping on a lower bunk had straw raining down on them every time the person above them turned over. She was glad that her brothers Mike and Ryan shared the bunk below hers. If she had been in the one over where Grandma slept with three-year-old Abby, she would hear about it each time she wiggled the least bit. Good thing Aunt Martha was a quiet sleeper, since she was above Grandma and Abby. Grandpa Elijah, Uncle John, and his friend Mark, and Uncle Ben were in another shed, one for teenage boys and men. Lisa's mother Mary had stayed behind, back home. She was working two jobs, sometimes three, to keep a roof over her children's heads. Times had been hard since her husband had died in the Korean police action, leaving her with two small children and a baby a month from being born. So that's the beginning of the book.
Thank you. Thanks, Deanna. So let's get started. What inspired you to write Dogwood Blossom? What inspired you to write Dogwood Blossom? And what is the significance of your title?
Okay. Several years ago, when I first joined Behind Our Eyes writing group, we put out an anthology. And in that one, I submitted a story called Christmas Pickles, which is actually chapter 3 of this book. And so over the years, I've written stories about my brothers and I and the stuff we got into. So when I was thinking of a book I could give my mother this year on my birthday, which is the day, I always call my mother and sing happy birthday to her on my birthday because it's her day when she gave birth to her first child. And so my first book was written for her 90th birthday gift. And this one was to be for this year's gift. Unfortunately, she died in July and my birthday's in September. So I didn't get the book up and ready to be published until the end of October. But Alice asked me if I would be open for a book launch for the December book launch for our organization. And I said I would. So that's how we got here.
Oh, and what is the significance of the title? What does Dogwood Blossom mean to you?
Well, since this is a fictionalization of my childhood, I wasn't going to use my name for the little girl, and I didn't include any material about blindness, per se, because I wanted it to be about what it's like to be a Native American child growing up at the time I grew up. And so it's traditional for the elder of our families to name babies in the family. And so I had the grandmother in the story give the little girl, whom I named Lisa, her own individual name and chose Dogwood Blossom.
Oh, thank you. And what are some of the life lessons that you are sharing within the pages and the stories in Dogwood Blossom?
I'm reading something.
Oh, I didn't realize that. Otherwise,
oops,
I wouldn't.
Hold on.
Yeah, somebody needs to mute that one. Okay.
Okay.
Anyway, I guess I wanted to describe how a Native family is part of the culture around them because they go to public schools, they live in society, but also apart because the reservation is their safe place where everybody knows them and they know their true name, not their birth certificate name. And they know each other and they work together as a community because community is the foundation for Native American culture, which is very different from the rest of the country where the individual is the most important and everybody is out for number one. We work together as families. We work together as neighbors and friends and community.
That's beautiful and very meaningful to all of us. You have such a way with words. Your sense of humor and wit and your talent for writing just combine beautifully in this book. Why do you think the combination of your Native American roots along with humor really blend together to make this more, although it's fiction, it's more authentic?
Well, it is based on fact. All of the stories in it were actual events in my childhood, for starters. But also, the way I write is to draw from my own personal experience. And a lot of times, I never started out to be a published author. we are a people that love to tell stories. So any dinner table conversation turns into each one of us trying to make everyone laugh about things that happened during our day. And we're all performers. I mean, if I was sitting at the table with my brothers and my mother and my little sister, and we were all sharing what happened today, salt shaker would be a microphone. All kinds of things would take place because we were used to making our own entertainment. And my first stories were all made up on the spot when my mother would send us to bed and turn out our lights. And so they couldn't read their comic books or whatever in the dark. And they would ask me to tell them a story so that they could fall asleep and I would make it up. So yeah. I've been a storyteller since I was quite small.
Thank you. And what do you hope that your readers, young and old, but you're basically targeting the younger age, what do you hope that they get out of your book and that they understand, and what do you hope they take away from what they're learning?
Well, understanding is one of the things I was trying to put forward because there are so many stereotypes that impact how people view people of different heritages. And they are afraid of the unknown. So I wanted to demystify what it's like so that children wouldn't ask silly questions like I was asked. Like in the first grade, I remember our teacher was talking about how our names reflected what countries we came from. And she said that my last name, which was my Apache father's last name, of course, Banda, was of Hispanic origin. And so she said, so your ancestor probably came from Mexico. And I said, no, I think we were always here. And so then when I explained that my mother was Ojibwa and my father was Apache, the kids started asking me, like, does your mom wear paint feathers? And things like that. So I wanted to make it so that people understood that what they see on a Western show on TV, Gunsmoke or whatever, isn't how we live today.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was, you know, how it was portrayed back then and what we saw on television. And yeah, I can imagine the questions you were asked. And I think it's beautiful whether, you know, to talk about what it was like. And I absolutely love the crafts. I suggested to Deanna that she ought to write a corresponding craft book with it or put the crafts back in the back by itself. But oh my God. And the one I love the most that I keep looking for a child size tube socks with the black on it was the tube socks making it into a snowman with M&Ms. I thought that was just so creative. I love it. So you all have to read it and hear all about all the crafts too. So let's see. And Deanna, you've been writing for pretty much all your life because you're a storyteller. And now you've had two published books and you're part of anthologies and you've written for, your writing has been published in other areas. What would you, for aspiring authors who are listening right now, whether it's here in person or to the podcast, what would you like to suggest to them?
Okay, be brave.
Okay, hold on. I'm just going to reword it for the editor. What would you like to suggest tell aspiring authors who may be facing challenges and or disabilities?
Well, as I said, be brave. I'm a shy person, so I don't get published a lot because I never send things away. And I have 4 or 5 books going at any one time on my computer. But as you can see, it's taken me, I'm 75 and I've only had 2 of them published. Because I'm not very brave about sending what I write out. I'm the queen of rewrites. I never think a piece is done. And if I hadn't had the impetus of making gifts to my mother, I would never have published a complete book. It's easier for me to do an article or a short story and send it away when I hear a writer's call for submissions for an anthology or a magazine that has this theme for that month or whatever. And I'll think, oh, I've got something about that in my working file, which I call musings. And then I just pull things out of there and, you know, work it up into whatever they're asking for, an article or a short story or whatever it was that struck me at the time and that I wrote something down to get it out of my head. Because otherwise it'll keep wandering around in there going, and what about this? And what about that? And so by writing scraps of things down, I have a lot of material that I can call on and send it out. So be brave. Don't be afraid of rejection. If you read any biographies of writers, you find that a lot of them have been rejected forever. And one of my big role models is, I think, of Delia Owens and Where the Crawdads Sing, that she, which was her breakthrough novel written when she was 70. So it's never too late, and it's never, you won't know if you can be published unless you send your stuff out.
Right. And so you hear this, folks, she's going to need encouragement to keep publishing other stories and other books. And I say that too, that we all need that encouragement, right? We all need that, the cheerleaders and people behind us, because sometimes some people may not have the support, the people who are enthusiastic about their writing in their own close circle. So it's about behind our eyes, this writing group and others that encourage you, and it's non-judgmental, yet giving suggestions on how you might make it better. And speaking of that, real quick, how do you believe your writing has grown since you've been a part of Behind Our Eyes?
Well, it has made me braver, because when I post things to our e-list or put something up for Magnets and Ladders, our magazine, our literary magazine, I am not quite as not nearly as afraid, because I know it's among friends, and I know I can count on my small writing group of five of us, because Marcia will catch all my grammar mistakes, and Clara will tell me where I need to connect two thoughts better. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I can count on my friends to give me criticism that doesn't destroy me. I had a college professor in my freshman year of English who once took something I wrote and ripped it in half in front of the class and threw it into the wastebasket and told me I wrote like a naive prepubescent. And because he said, with your disability and your heritage, you are suppressing all of the anger and pain and sorrow, and I want you, to let that out and stop worrying about punctuation and paragraphs and all of that stuff, and give me truth. And I was thinking at the time, but I've made it all the way to college, and I'm going to graduate, and then I'm going to get a good job, and then I'm going to, and my family and my people will be proud of me, and I don't want to look back and tear off scabs to bleach just for your titillation. I'm sorry. That's not who I am today. Yes, there was a little girl who experienced some really tough stuff. But that was then. This is now. I don't want to write just so you can be a voyeur on my sorrow.
Did you write about him?
About only a short story called Writer's Block.
But, and I love the way you just said that. You didn't want to tear off scabs, because I feel the same way. You know, there's a lot of stuff, but I don't want to go there. It's not comfortable. Yeah.
No, and also I didn't want to write it because I didn't want my mother to read it.
Yeah.
Because she would have blamed herself for not being omnipotent and always there to protect me from people that adults and others who should have been looking out for my best interests but weren't.
Right. Yeah. I don't know, but I do understand. I really do. So where can people find your book? How are they going to be able to purchase your book?
Well, right now they can get a Kindle version, an e-version from Amazon, or they can get it from Smashwords, which only does, e-versions, or they can use my entire name on the Amazon. It's Deanna Quietwater, one is one word, Noriega, and my two books will come up. I've also edited a few things, but I don't know if they'll come up. Like I edited the Guide Dog User's Handbook a couple of years ago, and it's up there on Amazon. If you ever thought you might want a guide dog, it'll tell you the pros and cons, and have a lot of excerpts from people's stories to so they can, you know, hear both the good and the bad about being a guide dog user, and get some guidance on where to look for a good guide dog school.
Yeah, great book. Well, thank you. And look at that. We are at 29 minutes, Annie Chiappetta. So now we are going to open it up for questions, and Annie will be picking on the raised hands.
Okay. And here we go. All right, Vanessa, you are the first one.
I could have expected that. Vanessa's always got her hand up with an answer or two.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Okay, great. First, Deanna, I was successful with the request that you made. It mm-hmm. took some doing, but I got it done.
Thank you.
What I'd like to know is, first off, I may be an adult, but I love reading children's books. I really do. Is there ever an opportunity that you might have to see if a resource like National Braille Press could put this book in Braille?
Well, they don't publish books unless they have the rights to them.
Mm-hmm.
And like all the people that write the how-to books, like Judy Dixon and Kim Nova and all of that, get no royalties at all because they offer it to National Braille Press as a service to the blind community. And so I doubt that they would take my book, but I could offer them a PDF copy of it if they wanted to put it into Braille for blind children.
What about the National Library Service? Same issue?
It has to be requested by patrons of the NLS, and if they get a few requests by patrons, they may record it. I live pretty close to, 30 miles away to a state library that has a recording system.
Yeah.
But, you know, and I wouldn't mind trying to record it myself for them. But as you can tell, when I was reading my excerpt, I tend to get nervous and stumble and tie my tongue in knots.
Yeah, because I'm sure there are some adult and young readers who'd love to either read it in audio format or in Braille. The Kindle app can sometimes be a little funky. When listening to voiceover read the book, so it's not impossible, but
no, but you can also get your Echo device to read you Kindle books.
Oh, really? You'll have to teach me how to do that. I'll talk to you about that later. Okay, I'm going to go away so somebody else can ask a question. But marvelous, marvelous interview. And by the way, she's a great playwright as well.
All righty. Eliza, you're next. And then after you is Sally.
Hi, this is Deanna. This is your fellow Peace Corps volunteer, fellow writer.
Elizabeth.
So first of all, just congratulations. So lovely to hear your thoughts, hear your excerpt. Congratulations. Heartfelt from all of us. But for me as a fellow writer, maybe a little twist there. my question for you actually involves the writing process and your choice to have put this into not a first person, an I, me narrative, but into the narrative of the little girl. Number one, why did you choose to do that? And number two, once you began to write that, how did that feel any different than if you had been sitting around the table telling a I and me story to your friends or family or after dark with your brothers and sisters? Thank you.
Well, as I said, I draw on my life experience when I write. And so when I offered the Christmas Pickle story, it was the first time I'd written anything about my childhood for publication. Part of it is I'm kind of a shy, private person. And part of it is what I said about not wanting to include the harder parts. So I didn't choose to write, even when I wrote 50 Years of Walking with Friends, it chronicled my life from getting my first dog between high school and college up to my ninth dog who passed away last year. And so my 10th dog isn't in that book because I got him a year ago in the summer after the book was published. So I didn't choose to write about a lot of personal things. I wrote, it's a compilation of thoughts and essays and narrative of what I went, you know, what going to train with a dog was like, living with a dog was like, that kind of thing. So there were things about my life, but nothing that would reflect badly on anyone. Or I'm not very brave about sharing the deeply personal. The hardest thing I generally put in poetry. So like one of my favorite poems in that book is Dancers, about a wonderful walk with my dog, 16 blocks, actually going to the dentist. So I was writing a poem in my head about walking with a really well-trained guide dog in that poem. And the hardest was writing about his death. So that went into a poem. So that's what I generally do with the tough stuff. It goes into poetry. And I'm still not brave enough to talk a lot about the darker things. So a children's story fit better with what I was willing to share.
Thank you, Deanna. Food for thought for all of us. Sally, you had a question?
Okay. As much as I admire Deanna's writing, we've been part of the same Small Behind Our Eyes critique group for many years. I think what I admire about Deanna even more is her support and kindness for other writers. If it weren't for Deanna's gentle nudging, I never would have published a book. So I'm just so glad that she's part of my life. And if people haven't read either of these books, do some Christmas shopping for yourself or other people. They're some of the best writings I've read from writers from behind our eyes and otherwhere. So congratulations, Deanna.
Thank you, Sally. And she's my favorite poet, by the way.
Checks in the mail.
thanks, Sally. Alan, you're next.
Hi, Deanna. I just have a comment. I believe in supporting people, and I've not read your book, but I'm a big, you've got one of the best souls of anybody I've ever come across. And keep sharing it with people, because that stuff is important. And I'm a son of the South, so I saw a lot of dogwood blossoms growing up, baby, and that's a great that is one of the prettiest trees ever. So you chose a good title for your book, and I just want to encourage you. I mean, I love being in all the book groups with you and stuff, and you've got a great spirit. Keep sharing it.
Thank you, Alan.
Okay.
Thanks, Alan. Nicolette?
Well, first I'd like to mention something that I read recently that I don't remember which Native American nation it was, but and I don't know whether it's in their own language to be left on the moon, and they wouldn't translate it until the astronauts got back. And the translation was, "Beware the white man, they will steal your land." And I think it's a true story, but that's what happened. And I read Bury My Heart at Wounded Knee when I was a teenager, or pretty close to it. I'm 78 now. I can't believe Deanna's 75. You sure don't sound like it. But at any rate, somebody told me today, well, I can't believe you're 78. So I guess we're just a younger, you know, we're getting younger instead of older. But
wait, yeah, before you know it, we'll be in diapers, I'm afraid.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, we do go through another childhood. I saw my dad go through that as he got to be 95. But at any rate, as far as writing is concerned, my dad was a writer. And I used to do a lot of short stories, real short stories and stuff when I was in college. But one of the things I think I do a lot of audio reading or listening, rather. And it's always wonderful when the author is the one who reads the book. So even if you stumble, I wouldn't worry about it. But, you know, I'm sure you know Larry Gassman and John Gassman. They could probably edit anything. So if you wanted to read your own book, you could, and they could edit out anything or not, or leave it in there. Because that's what's part of being human. You know, you wrote it, and you're the one who feels it. And I think you should seriously consider reading it yourself. And I also agree with you that in my experience, the Native Americans, the Chinese families, and the Black families are the ones who stick together and they take care of each other much more so than the white man. And what the white man has done to the Native Americans and other people of color in this country over from its inception has been absolutely unacceptable and criminal and an abomination. So now I'm going to shut up and get off my soapbox. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Nikki. But be careful what you say, because, you know, that's revisionist history when we insist on telling the truth.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Thank you so much.
All righty. I don't see any more hands.
Well, yay. So I think I'm off the hook.
Oh, no, not yet, ma'am. Mm-mm. Oh, Alice's hand went up. Okay, Alice.
I'm Alt plus A button.
Hello, can you hear me?
Yes Alice.
Okay. Congratulations, first of all, Deanna, on your second book and such a wonderful book. I have read it twice through my Echo Dot, and it's a fine way to read this wonderful book, and I enjoyed it both times so much, and it would make such a lovely gift book for so many people of all ages, from that age group that you mentioned, 8 to 12, and on up, and I wish you much good luck and success with your book. And I just wonder, when you renamed yourself and your brothers and the other people in your book, did you also rename the dog? I thought it was so clever.
No, that was actually the name we gave my first dog that was actually all mine.
Well, you may want to tell about that name. At least it was very clever. And just one more quick question. If you had such a beautiful cover on your first book, if you would describe the cover of this book also. And I know there are two very nice testimonials, I believe, on the back of your book as well. So it's
a
lovely book. Thank you.
I had lovely, lovely other children's writers like Cheryl that were generous enough to contribute Cheryl an intro, and Feather and Diane reviews for putting on in my book and on the cover, because they're all great people. Anyway, the cover is not an entire tree, but it's a picture, a cut down picture of the green leaves and the flowers of the dogwood tree.
Hmm. That's perfect, yeah. Sue, you have a question.
Yes, I was wondering, what age level or grade level is it written for?
We've chose 8 to 12 because it's about The start of the story is when Lisa is 10 and her brothers are 8 and 6. Okay. So,
he has left the meeting.
Well, congratulations on writing your second book.
Well, thank you.
We have Jim. He has his hands raised.
I've been a longtime admirer of Deanna, which is why I had to come on this call when I saw what was being unveiled here. I guess today especially I find it fascinating and interesting, but maybe from my perspective sad, Deanna, that you feel yourself unmoved or unable to talk about those things in life which have been hard or sad. And the only reason that I even decided I would raise my hand is there is a podcast that was just done by Anderson Cooper interviewing the president and talking about dealing with grief and how they have each in their own way learned to deal with grief. But one of the bits and pieces that came out of a subsequent interview that I listened to was both of them now finding an expressed need to talk about this, to get it out, to get it into the world, and that's an important aspect of coming to terms with it. So I'm not trying to take anything apart or just make a suggestion of, you know, maybe it would be something you'd benefit from.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I have a great respect for your views. Obviously, we've worked together in the past on advocacy stuff and and blindness stuff and all of that. But part of it is a reluctance to take center stage for me. I am more comfortable in the background of things. It's hard for me to put myself forward, and I seldom do it unless I wouldn't forgive myself for not stepping up and doing something that needed to be done. And a lot of what I would write about affects other people, and I never wanted to publish anything that would make my mother feel that she wasn't the best mother in the world. Because she was.
Thank you, Dean.
I respect and admire that, and I'm not coming after that.
No, but it's the stories that she doesn't know because I never told her. That would have hurt her. Because as a parent, you love your kids to death, and you want to make the world a safe place, but it isn't always. Because you're not there 24/7. So I seldom told my mother the hard parts because she would blame herself. So that she's gone, maybe I can do more of that. But for me, putting it a distance from me, putting it into a story or a poem is easier than telling it myself.
That's fine.
Deanna, this is Annie. I think you're the way you express your experiences and your emotions and your feelings in your writing is, to me, it sounds to me like it's what grounds you and what keeps you focused. And
oh, sure.
Yeah.
I did a poem about my inner child being a little girl trapped in amber. And talking about how I could hear her cries. But she was the only one that could change things by growing up. And she would make it better for herself if she just understood that she was valuable and as the Creator had intended her to be.
Well, I can't speak for the Creator, and I just know that everybody here tonight probably shares my feelings and my thoughts about you having great value to us, and that coming here tonight and sharing all of that is, you are brave and courageous. You say that you're not brave and that you're shy and you're recalcitrant about things. I'm like, I don't think so.
Well, as I said, I can talk to this group because these are all my friends.
We are your friends, yes. And speaking of that, we have a lot. We have, I think, four more hands raised, but Dafina has been waiting. And I think, Dafina, you might actually be, maybe we can get one more question in after you before Marilyn takes the floor and we close up the meeting. Okay? All right, Dafina, you have the floor.
Okay. Thank you so much, Deanna, for presenting your book to us, and congratulations. And for being vulnerable, I just had a quick question. You mentioned that in your culture, you have your birth certificate name and your real name. Mm-hmm. And I was wondering which one Deanna was.
That's a birth certificate name. My mother had a passion for Deanna Durbin when she was growing up.
Oh, that's where that came from. Okay. Thank you, Dafina.
It's just Cheryl.
Okay, so Cheryl and then Marilyn.
Okay, thanks. I just wanted to say, again, thank you, Deanna, for this honor to be able to share in your book launch. And you have so many people who care and love you. And I must say, Deanna's one of the few people, when I started Writing Works Wonders on my own, it was a writing workshop. And she sometimes there was just Deanna, my host, and me. And I just say thank you, thank you. Appreciate. I'm so grateful to have found Behind Our Eyes too. I understand in some people that what they're saying about you being vulnerable. Thank you. And sometimes it's easier to talk to somebody about what happened, but putting it into words, there's a lot of dynamics there.
It hurts.
Yeah, it does. Yeah, I get it. And so many of us get it, and yet people want to know, they just believe in you and support you in all you do. You're an amazing woman. Thank you. And I'm grateful to know you. And thank you for this opportunity. Annie, back to you.
Okay. Deanna, I'm not going to repeat what Cheryl said, but I feel the same way.
Well, you know, I love you and supported you when you were starting out too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We all had that moment. And I think that's why we're all here, because we want to keep that support going. So Marilyn, take it away. Marilyn Brandmith, she's the president of Behind Our Eyes, and she's going to tell us a little bit about our organization before we wrap up and go for the night.
This is Marilyn Smith. This is the, 2006 to 23. That's a lot of years that we've been getting together, holiday times, with membership, and now to have so many friends with us, that is just wonderful. And I have to tell you, I was the editor of that first anthology, and when I saw Christmas Pickles, I knew that was in immediately. I mean, there was no doubt about it. And I thought at the time, I wonder if she's going to do a book about that. I don't know if I said anything like that to her, but if I didn't, I should have, because I was so glad to see this book launch and see her come out with this book. We have so much good spirit for what we have done over these years. And then also coming up in the next year, we have continuation of book launches, of course, and classes and our list, mailing list, email list. And if anyone is here who is not one of us, but is a writer with a disability or knows somebody who might benefit from it, please pass the word on about our writing group and submissions for Magnets and Ladders, our twice a year online magazine, can be made whether you're a member or not. You just have to be a writer with a disability. And we're glad to have people come to our website, magnetsandladders.org. Magnetsandladders.org is where the publication, and they're all up there, so you can check out the latest one and see our guidelines are up there. And then for membership information, to get in touch with someone to ask questions or to check out, we have a special events page. We always have a calendar with everything that's coming up in the next month. Tell you about our classes, our speakers, our workshops, critique sessions, all kinds of good things, including our book launches, of course. And that is behindoureyes.org, behindoureyes.org. And there is a link that you can use to ask questions or join us or whatever works. And I just have to say to Deanna, I have a cousin who lived in the West most of her life, and she taught Native Americans in Alaska, Canada, and in the West, some in special schools, some in public schools, and she has told me so many stories. So the characters in your book seem so real. That's just the beauty of it. It really feels real, and that's because you lived it. So thanks so much. And thanks to everybody for coming tonight. We're just delighted to have so many attendance. That's all I have.
Thank you, Marilyn. So this is your host, Annie Chepeta. Thank you, everybody, for coming. And I hope you have a good evening. And you can listen to this recording. It'll probably be up at some point in the near future. Good night, everyone. Thank you, Deanna. Thank you, Cheryl.
Thank you very much. Stay well,
bye,
and be safe.
Thank you, everyone. Bye-bye. Thank you, everyone, for coming. I really appreciate it, because talking to my friends is a lot easier than talking to people that I don't know.
Which is